first and foremost, and this is one of my personal strategies, the event does not start when the attendee shows up or signs on. Right. It starts from that very first touch point. And whether that is a tweet or a save the date email, that very first mention of the event is when that attendee's journey begins.
Hi, I'm Ankush. I'm the founder of Eventable.com, and you're listening to Building Awesome Events. Our special guest today is Ashley Priest, former head of event services at Hopin. Ashley has, you know, worked through so many different things. She's moved from the fashion industry to the event space, and I'm very curious to understand how she made that transition and talk about all things event marketing. So welcome to the show, Ashley. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. Let's get started, Ashley. Let's start from the very beginning. You know, I was seeing that you spent almost 6 years in, you know, lingerie design in the fashion space, you know, with large brands like Victoria's Secret and La Senza. You know, how did really the move to events happen? You know, what got you thinking that I need to be in the event space? I mean, was it just serendipity, or, you know, was it something that you worked towards?
I think it was a little bit of serendipity. It was actually 10 years total in the fashion industry. I was also in London for a bit with some boutique brands. On my, you know, my social calendar, I've always been passionate about events. Mm-hmm. My friends jokingly refer to me as the field trip leader. Mm-hmm. And I actually used to write in my youth, in my 20s and 30s, an events newsletter for New York that was called The A-List, Ashley's Awesome Activities. I always did that on the side. My path to events in a more business professional sector actually started with nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So I've been a supporter of She's the First for more than a decade. And that foray into fundraising events started with a benefit concert that we held called Girls Who Rock. Yeah. And we actually, our headlining artist was from American Idol. We raised $30,000. We sponsored an entire class of students through a school in India actually called Shanti Bhavan. And now we've been doing that for over a decade now. And I unfortunately was laid off from L Brands, which is the parent company of Victoria's Secret. And, you know, selling underwear was not saving the world. I wanted to I wanted to do something that was more beneficial with my skill set. And I'd always leverage my industry contacts in the fashion world to support fundraisers and different aspects of events. So I was fortunate enough at the time to become involved with a social enterprise organization called Social Ventures. And they partnered with another group called the Columbus Foundation that helped nonprofits develop social enterprises so they could have a revenue stream that existed out of the grant cycle. And it was this great mashup of my design, marketing, retail background, and understanding how to market a business and sell product, and helping these nonprofits understand what they could take as a skill set that was either a service or a product and share it with their constituent base and have sustainable revenue. And that evolved into working with startups. And then I was an advisor for Columbus Startup Week, which used to be part of the Techstars program. Which is part of Chase for Business. And that is where I met the founder of Women in Digital, which is now Women Together Digital. And I became their national director of events.
That's, you know, that sounds exhausting to me already. I mean, that's like a lot.
And it's a lot. You know, sorry, I was trying to give you the condensed version.
And the one line that really stood out for me was that, you know, selling underwear was not going to save the world. I think I'm going to use that to to promote this episode. So after, you know, after the Women in Digital experience, you know, I saw that you moved on to managing the Women in Analytics conference. So what was that like? I mean, so talk me through, you know, a couple of the jobs after that where you were really working in events. What kind of events were these? Large format events, in-person events? And really, what was the experience that you gained during this time?
So the whole point of my role in both of those organizations, Together Digital, which is what they rebranded as, Together Digital and Women in Analytics, they are business associations. They do have a membership base. And we did have a growth model, an aggressive growth model. I was one of the first three employees at Together Digital. and was just for a while consulting at Women in Analytics as they grew.
Yep.
And we were able to double the national conference in size every year. We had really smart marketing strategy, but very grassroots. A lot of it was word of mouth. And we were giving a platform to women in both of these industries that are very heavily male dominated, that are STEM fields, that you don't always feel like you have a peer that understands that you can go to. And it was a lot about community building. So what I did at Together Digital is not only did I do our national annual conference every year, which was at headquarters in Columbus, Ohio. I was influential in the team that became an official partnership with South by Southwest. We had events there. We had membership discounts for our members. Additionally, we had 25 city chapters. And so every single month, we had 25 member-facing events in cities across the U.S.
Wow.
And then Women in Analytics is a more global footprint. They have ambassadors as far as Singapore, Berlin, and other parts of Europe, and obviously other parts of the U.S.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, sounds like a really enriching experience, Ashley. And finally, you know, we see that you make the move to the virtual event management software side of things with Hopin. That must have been a little crazy. Tell us about that, because, you know, that's a sector really on an unpredictable edge right now with, you know, in-person surging so much. And a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen with these companies. But, you know, just tell me a little bit about your experience. You obviously had a ringside view at Hopin. What was it that you were tasked? What were you tasked with doing? And how did that sort of play out?
So similar, I think Hopin is facing a lot of similar challenges as the world moves back into, or not back into, but moves into the future of the event space, where I think hybrid is definitely the way we're going to go, and virtual is never going to go away. We have seen the benefits and the drawbacks of that, but we all know the benefits and drawbacks of being at in-person events. And I think the one thing I can say about Hopin is that they hired very talented, passionate, but also some of the most genuinely kind, sincere, wonderful people that I've ever had the pleasure of working with. We still get together once a month to connect. But the challenges that they face is I think they were still trying to straddle both of these worlds. And their whole motto was about connection. And what I spent 6 months doing was developing a return to in-person events. And I don't think it fully aligned with the leadership team's vision of what a community platform could be. And they didn't have a strong in-person event background. A lot of them had data. A lot of them had marketing. A lot of them had resource allocation, operational things. They didn't come from that nitty-gritty event side of knowing what it's like to be crawling under a table, looking for an extension cord 5 minutes before going live. There's a different aspect of that that I don't think they could reconcile.
And I think those aspects are difficult to reconcile with a piece of software. I mean, it's really going to be tough. It's never, I mean, you know, things like networking have not yet been solved. You know, the fact that you're going to shake somebody's hand or, you know, go out, you know, get a drink at a pub nearby or a bar nearby. I mean, those are things that technology has not been able to solve yet. So what really, I mean, as the head of event services at Hopin, what was your mandate? I mean, what were you really doing at Hopin?
So we had a team across 7 countries. We had our event managers that worked very closely with our customer success team. And there was the way that the customer journey went is that we aligned you with the different platform features that you needed. There was some training. And then my event managers, depending on what level of client you were, we would be there with you in your virtual platform, making sure that everything ran smoothly, giving our best recommendations, and also helping you troubleshoot. Depending on if it was, you know, a one-off event, maybe a charity doing a nonprofit, or we had larger companies. We were with Coca-Cola Asia, actually was one of our partners, that we were doing all of their internal events. So we went up and down the scale of event size, 5 people to, you know, 5,000 people. And what I was doing for Hopin was eventifying some of their language and practices and policies, so that when you were an event planner as a professional seeking out this platform, the lingo and the application of the virtual component to what have been the real component made sense to you, because they weren't quite using event terms that made sense to everyone. And even when we called things production in the event space means so many different things to different people depending on the role.
And now that, you know, you've been through this experience, Ashley, how would you view a virtual strategy versus an in-person strategy? I mean, when do you think someone should, like, you know, go towards either of these? And, you know, so what would be your go-to and for what reasons?
I do think, as I said earlier, you know, virtual is here to stay in some way. Maybe it's hybrid events, but mm-hmm. I think you have to decide what are your event goals, what are your event needs, and what are your attendee goals and attendee needs, and how do those align, and what is best suited to that purpose? If it's more of a workshop, maybe, does everyone need to travel and pay for hotel and be there in person? Like, we have seen that educational components work in a virtual capacity. So mm-hmm. maybe a virtual event is just fine for that. Right. Are you having a really famous speaker with a tight schedule? Is it okay to just Zoom them in, but the rest of the conference is live? Every event is its own unique creature. Right. And I think trying to blanketly say one is better than the other for your event doesn't always apply. And it doesn't lead you to the best results.
Right. No, well said. I agree, you know, completely, that it's all about, you know, what goals, what are the outcomes that you want out of, you know, the events. And you really have to, you know, go with the flow based on what it is that you're trying to pull off.
You wanted to check off some things of a list to help you figure out your strategy. The things that I always look about is not just for the speakers, but also for the attendees. What kind of accessibility do they need? Is it ADA compliant? What kind mm-hmm. of cost factors are you looking at? A lot of times people think virtual is cheaper. If mm-hmm. you're doing it cheaper, you're doing it wrong. Oftentimes it costs just as much as an in-person event. What kind of on-demand viewing are you going to have post-event access to speakers? Is it better for them to not travel and be virtual? Are you doing it only local? And then things like replays and social sharing and how that builds into your larger pre and post-event marketing strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my next question actually would be that from a tech perspective, you know, and there are like a gazillion tech platforms out there, right? And that's probably part of the struggle, and in-person is surging. There are 800 companies like hop in the pond. But what's the one that, you know, you would rely on? I mean, have you been exposed, or have you tried out anything other than Hopin?
I have tried almost a gazillion of them. Like you said, there's so many platforms out there. I think I said this a little bit earlier, but the better question to ask yourself is always, does this platform align with my event needs and goals? Do those align with the attendee experience and the attendee expectations? Yep. What are the features of this platform? And what kind of support do you need as the person producing it or executing it to make it run smoothly? Because depending on the platform you use, you can have a lot of customer support from the customer service team or manager team or however they're calling it internally. Right. Sometimes it's like you get 1 hour of training and it's sink or swim for you.
You're going to go into an area of endless demos, you know, because if you just want to try on, how do you find it? Actually, here I'm going to take a second and really plug an application that a friend of mine has built. Marian, his name is, from Amsterdam, and he's built an application called EventMender.com, right? So for people listening, if you want to find a good virtual platform based on your precise objectives, check out EventMender.com, EventMender.com. And I think you can answer 5 or 6 questions and it recommends, you know, what the best virtual platform for you should be. Other than that, I think actually what you said is absolutely right, that you have to really understand what your goals are and then select the best platform for you. But in the absence of, and you know, a tool like this, you'll just get sucked into doing demo after demo with vendor after vendor.
Yeah. I mean, I have some I would recommend. So obviously, Cvent has been around for a very long time for a reason. It does work. I know, not dogging them at all. Some people find that the infrastructure and the user interface is a little bit archaic, but it works. It's a proven platform. Obviously, Zoom is a good old standby. I think Zoom is getting to the point where it has features like a Cvent. And one of the other more specialized platforms where you have customization options, you have different applications of how you'd use it, whether it's a workshop where it's more of a talking heads panel kind of thing. I really am fond of Bizibo. And I think that they have a whole ethos of event education as part of just their company and what they share in their newsletters and their free resources and tools that they do provide to event professionals. And then another great networking one that you can interface with your platform that I have personal great experience with is called Twine.
I love Twine. Yeah. You know, I've seen Twine in action. You know, I think with the speed networking, kind of thing that it does and the way in which it matches up people, I think it's really cool. It's made some headway in terms of networking, but you know, as I said, sometime back, the whole experience of meeting someone, that whole serendipity experience of meeting somebody new for the first time, you know, grabbing a drink with them, you know, that's something that can't be replaced. Other than that, I think Twine is great.
Yeah, I think I have a unique story with Twine. One of my best friends I met on Twine, actually. It was a demo on the event manager's blog, which has been acquired by Skift, actually. But they had Twine come on, do a segment, and then everyone got to try it. And I connected with this wonderful person named Jared Hatch. And Jared and I realized not only were we in the industry together in New York, we lived about 20 blocks from each other in Manhattan.
Wow.
And so we met up for a coffee in person afterward, and now he's one of my dearest friends, actually. So Twine, if anyone wants a plug for user application in real life, they should reach out to me.
Twine is going to get acquired by Bumble, I think. And, you know, not the way it's going. In terms of traditional marketing, Ashley, tell me, how have you been able to create awareness for your events, and what are some of the channels that you think work best around audience acquisition? Has this been a cross-functional activity where you work with other marketing folks? And how involved have you been with this side of things?
Always. So I think first and foremost, and this is one of my personal strategies, the event does not start when the attendee shows up or signs on.
Right.
It starts from that very first touch point. And whether that is a tweet or a save the date email, that very first mention of the event is when that attendee's journey begins.
Yeah.
And I think people lose sight of the pre-event marketing. And I always work very closely with the cross-functional team, especially being in larger organizations like I was when I was at Convene and when I was at Hopin. Your operational strategy shouldn't just be having an event for the sake of an event. Where does it fit into your larger campaign for 3 months, 6 months, for the year, as part of your whole storytelling? And it's critical to the success of the event and the attendee experience that they feel like they're part of this community from the get-go, right? And if it's just one reminder email, that's doing nothing to promote your event before they even get there.
Yeah. And, you know, community is a buzzword currently. People are debating whether, you know, event organizers, event marketers should move to a community-led, you know, model. But does that really work? I mean, how do you really go about creating a community around your event?
I think the way that I would look at that, and I actually thought about this too, is that the concept of community is everything right now. It's in, and I would say you, the universal you, you're nothing without your supporters, right? You're nothing without your community. And so for me, how I would define community is that this, it's a fellowship of not just shared ideas, but often ideals, and that your attendees do and should care about this. So, you know, it's, we're here to share knowledge and experience, and whether or not the overall was a good experience, it like, was it worthwhile for your time, your money, and this collective consciousness of your community, having that shared set of ideals? I think when you don't have authenticity in your community, it shows. Like if you're just doing the event to do the event because it's trendy, it's fun, whatever, you're not going to have longevity. You're not going to have the opportunity to build any legacy into your events and have them be ongoing things the way that South by Southwest is now. Is it a little inflated? Yes. But there's a strong community around that. And there's a reason they go every year. And there's a reason that they attract speakers.
Finally, Ashley, you know that we are the world's first review platform for business conferences, and our goal is to help event marketers further their brands through the power of social proof and community marketing. What really does social proof mean to you? How important has that been in your arsenal? And do you really think that your attendees care about it?
Yeah, I think for me, this is reviews are very important, right? And especially in professional circles, because if you've had a bad experience somewhere, whether that is a restaurant or a conference or an interaction with a vendor, you are so much more prone to take the time to leave a bad review than you are to leave a good review. So there is so much inherent value in those good reviews.
Yeah.
And these are being left by our peers in the industry. Yep. That is what gives it social proof. That's what makes it so powerful. Mm-hmm. You're more likely to believe your peer in the industry than anyone else's opinion. They're not some random person on the internet. They're actually someone doing what you would be doing in your same day to day and sharing that they found value in XYZ.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that, Ashley. I think that makes complete sense. And, you know, for folks listening, I think this has been a great episode. A lot of little nuggets here. You know, the show is going to be up. The transcript is going to be up. So please take a listen. Ashley, thank you so much. We loved having you here with us. It is a short show intentionally to allow people to consume it quickly. Loved having you here, and you know, all the best with your career going forward.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet you, and thank you for having me on the show.